New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns, and a small coffee for just $5.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody. Michael Steele here. Great conversation with the author of the new book, Corruptible, Who Gets Power and How It Changes Us, none other than Brian Klaas. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian Klaas. That's K-L-A-A-S. And so, Brian, I wanted to I got to pull it up real fast because I loved this this part of the book. It was the chapter 6, Bad Systems or Bad People. Mm. And you start off with the great question. It was the best way you could tease the opening here. You go, what can you learn about humanity by watching how people behave while sipping coffee at Starbucks? In fact, turns out quite a bit. Tell us about that experiment, which really I thought it was almost like the Good Samaritan experiment, but on a much grander scale, that really kind of put a finger on a lot of the cultural and other indicators of how we wind up the leaders we end up with.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I found these studies fascinating. And basically what it comes down to is something called Rice theory. So Rice theory is this idea that if you come from a community that cultivates rice, then you are more likely to be communitarian and sort of, you know, rely on your neighbors, because you can't have a successful rice crop unless you coordinate with all the people around you. You can't make it in on your own. Whereas if you're from an area that cultivates wheat, you're more likely to be individualistic. Now, that's because wheat can be made on your own. You don't have to care about whatever anyone else is doing. This sounds like a lunatic theory, right? I mean, it sounds completely crazy. But they looked at this in China, and China, you know, you can look at the same, it's the same country and, you know, thousands of years of history, but there are certain sections of China that are wheat producing, certain sections that are rice producing.
Right.
And what they found is that when they did a series of studies, one of them was at Starbucks, and they looked at, okay, how many people sit alone at Starbucks, or are you constantly with your friends? And also another thing about this is they would set up this chair in the aisle at Starbucks. Yeah. All this is in China.
Right.
And they'd check whether people would move around the chair because it's blocking their way, or whether they pick up the chair and put it back. And these examples are things that reflect individualism versus sort of a more collectivist or communitarian mindset, because people who move the chair, they're more individualistic. People who move around it are more communitarian. Right. And the same for solo sippers at Starbucks versus people who go to Starbucks with their friends. It reflects these divides. And sure enough, the divides were very, very strong in terms of these backgrounds in the different regions of China. And of course, if you run these studies in the United States, you get totally different responses. It's the same sort of thing. It's a much more individualistic culture. So there's a lot more solo sippers and a lot more people moving the chair. Now, what I try to do with this knowledge is I say, okay, there's a lot of stuff that affects our behavior, right? We behave the way we do for a lot of reasons, but surely the systems we come from matter a ton. If even the cultivation of crops in our area affects our behavior, then surely, you know, the corporate culture, the political culture is going to do more of a more of an effect on us than other things. So one of the areas I love in this book is the weirdest thing I did probably was I flew out to Vermont, where Paul Bremer lives. He's you know, the guy who ran Iraq in 2003. He's now a ski instructor in Vermont. And I took a ski lesson with him. And what I found interesting about Paul Bremer is that, you know, whatever you think of him, whatever you think of his record on Iraq, he had served with distinction when he was an ambassador to Norway and some other places. Mm-hmm. And then he gets to Iraq. And one of the first meetings he holds, he asks the question, can we shoot the looters? Can we shoot the people who are stealing TVs and so on and ransacking Baghdad? Now, I mean, if he had suggested that as the ambassador of Norway, he would have been recalled immediately, right? I mean, that's the end of it. And the point I try to make with him is, okay, so he ends up in Iraq. He's getting, he's getting bombed with mortar fire from Al Qaeda, you know, offshoots and all these people affiliated with Saddam's regime. He's got a bounty of 10,000 grams of gold on his head by Osama bin Laden, which I think is a distinction unique to him as a Vermont ski instructor. But it's one of these things where you think, okay, he's in this horrible situation, this horrible system. He has to make very different calculations than he did when he was the ambassador to Norway. And then he comes back to the United States. I mean, the first thing he said to me when we're on the chairlift in this Vermont ski resort was we got stuck underneath the sort of chairlift tower. And he says, whenever I'm teaching kids, you know, I tell them it's lucky to get stuck here and they need to make a wish and then it will come true. And I'm like, this is not what I expected. You know what I mean? And I think the point is that we're much more chameleon-like than we like to believe. We morph depending on the systems that we live in. And I think that actually is quite hopeful because it means, you know, it's much easier to change systems than it is to change people. So in a way that gives us our political project and our political homework to do.
Yeah, it does in a lot of ways, but I still come back to the point that, and it really kind of, I guess it once since you confirmed for me an idea that I put out there that when I look at our economy, our you know, healthcare and, you know, our race relations and all of these other systems that are out there, and then I look at our politics in the past, you know, you can make the case that all of those systems and the policies that sort of roils within them sort of dictated the political engagement, dictated the politics. The politics was a reflection of, you know, our desire to have better healthcare, or our desire to have lower taxes, or our desire to feed more people, whatever it happens to be. Today, we seemingly are in a position where our politics is dictating the outcomes of those particular systems. So the systems are no longer driving the politics are driving the systems itself. So we're more tribal, we're much more insular, we look suspiciously at each other. We've got political leaders like Representative Gosar, you know, threatening to kill other members via cartoons. And you've got, you know, other members, you know, on the left who are threatening their fellow members if they don't support a grand spending plan. So you have all of these threats and this tension that's sort of blowing out of our political system. And I use the term infection, infecting all these other important systems that really can't afford to be infected. Do you kind of see it that way? Is that a good way to look at this, or am I looking at it a little bit skewed?
No, I think you're right. And I think this connects to something that you said earlier about how it's sort of a reflection of us sometimes too, and what's being demanded, that we're sort of in exactly the place that we want to be. I mean, at least not that we want to be, but that's a certain segment of the population wants us to be in. You know, I think the thing with Gosar, for example, or some of the vitriol that exists in politics, is it conditions the future leaders to behave in the same way. you know, I think that's why accountability is so important. I have one of the chapters that I have later on in the book is about how, you know, accountability really does matter. Oversight really does matter. It affects people's behavior. And I think when you see Gosar behave the way he did, I mean, he shared a video of him murdering somebody, right? And like any other job in America, he'd be fired for that.
Right.
And yet, you know, it's like we've set the bar lower in Congress than we have in corporate America over and over and over again. And well, what's that going to do? It's going to mean that there's going to be more people who behave like them, especially because the Republican base rewards it, right? I mean, one of the things that I think is really difficult, especially in places where it's a solid, solid, deep red district, let's say, you know, in the rural South,
right,
is that to differentiate yourself, you have to be more Trump-like. You have to be more Gosar-like. And there's no consequences to doing that. So it's an interaction between the sort of elite accountability and the demand from the base. And I think that's what's happening in the Republican Party right now, is that the elite accountability has disappeared. I mean, there's no shame, there's no consequences. When people used to sort of say, you know, I also think this is partly because of, and this is something I don't talk about in the book, but I think it's also partly because of the breakdown of party control to an extent. I mean, yep. In the past, yep. You know, in the past, absolutely. You wanted to go on Fox News, you're gonna have to play by the rules of, you know, the Mitch McConnell of the day or whatever.
Now
everybody has their own Twitter feed, and they can just sort of, you know, Lauren Boebert, who would be, you know, 25 years ago, she would have been a nobody hoping to rise up the ladder over two decades. You know, now she's broken out because she's become more extreme than the party, and that attracts a certain type of person to her political base. So, you know, it's the breakdown of sort of the accountability structure at the top, and then also the demand from the bottom that's always looking for the shock, the sort of extreme. And also, you know, I think, frankly, the entertainment. I mean, I think one of the things that really is a shame.
That's a big part of it.
And that's why when you say the P.T. Barnum, I think you're totally right, because politics has become about entertainment in the United States. And I think that's something where we really have to think long and hard about whether we want that kind of system where the real payoff is that we get amused rather than get problems solved.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have persevered despite the costs. It shares the experiences of courageous people who have sometimes been celebrated, but too often castigated for standing up for themselves and for others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and culprits responsible for perpetuating and promoting workplace toxicity. You'll hear stories from female celebrities, music label executives, politicians, police officers, and many others as we examine the cultural reevaluations, policy changes, and legal steps that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.